Nerdy Show listeners, we need your help. A bunch of our series have been nominated for the Audioverse Awards, a podcast award show for audio dramas. The Orphans, Nerdcasting the Multiverse, Dungeons and Doritos, and Liberty have all been nominated for awards in music, acting, writing, and production. The semifinals are open to fan voting right now, and we'll never make it to the finals without your votes. Don't delay, we've only got till October 30th, so head to nerdyshow.com/audioverse2017 to see the list of nominees and get voting.
Hey there, listeners. This is Pat the Talking Bearskin Rogue from Flame On right here on the Nerdy Show Network. If you're looking for some sweet nerdy queer in your ear, then head over to nerdyshow.com/flameon and check us out. We cover everything from TV to movies, comics to drag queens, and so much more. For a gay and geeky slice of pop culture life, get ready to flame on.
State of the Empire is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. And is brought to you in part by Consequence of Sound, the web's foremost source of music and film news, reviews, and insights. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to State of the Empire, Nerdy Show's Star Wars speculation podcast, where we look for news in Alderaan places. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hey, I'm Matt.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about all the big shakeups for Star Wars Episode 9, the recent announcements for the Han Solo solo film, and all the additional things we've learned about Episode 8 since our last all Episode 8 episode. State of the Empire took a little siesta during the summer as things got really crazy, sleepy for the show, but not for the rest of us. So in our past episode, we did exclusively all the latest news for Episode 8, but that means we have not even touched the shakeup, the scandal coming from Episode 9. Let's do a bit of a timeline here. Colin Trevorrow of Jurassic World fame is directing this movie. He was going to be writing it as well alongside Derek Connolly. And then we got this announcement that Jack Thorne was pulled in to also write the film. This dude's the co-creator of the British TV shows The Fades, The Cast-Offs, The Last Panthers, and National Treasure. He also did a recent adaptation of his Dark Materials into Android's Dream of Electric Sheep. I think he also did the Harry Potter stage show.
Yep.
So a weird...
Which, depending on who you talk to, wasn't that great at all.
I haven't heard anybody tell me it was great, period. So I don't even know if it's dependent.
It's a weird repertoire, enough for us to be like, okay, well, that's interesting. At least Trevorrow isn't writing it because that hasn't, you know, aided him much in the past. And then Book of Henry came out, which I haven't seen. Matt, have you seen it?
No, I'm tempted to take that plunge, but it's been difficult.
I mean, understandable as to why you wouldn't. This film is critically panned, and you can watch the trailer, and you can see why. It's the most, like... yank you all around, imbalanced, absurd looking, but not in a good way kind of movie.
And like harshly panned. Critics not worried if they were going to be able to like have a successful professional relationship with Colin Trevorrow ever again type panned. Like they just railed into this movie.
And then not too very long after that, boom, September 5th on StarWars.com. Lucasfilm and Colin Trevorrow have mutually chosen to part ways on Star Wars Episode 9. Colin has been a wonderful collaborator throughout the development process, but we have all come to the conclusion that our visions for the project differ. We wish Colin the best, and we'll be sharing more information about the film soon. Hollywood Reporter then said, there's been a rumor since June, just before the opening of Book of Henry, that this was going to happen. And sources tell that the main conflict throughout the development was script issues, with multiple drafts from Colin Trevorrow leading to an unmanageable working relationship. And Matt, you noticed something very peculiar during this time as well.
Yeah, that was Paulo Hidalgo reducing his Twitter follows. Is this what we're on the same
yeah,
page?
Yeah,
and he decided that like, you know, he was going to reduce himself down to, I think it was 100, because I think that that's considered like a good amount of people to be following. I think that's like a Twitter standard. And when he did his, when all the cuts were done, noticeably Colin Trevorrow and other people associated with Episode 9 were gone, as well as like Lord and Miller and other people who are no longer associated with Star Wars films. But suddenly, you know, but Rian Johnson still was, and obviously J.J. Abrams and Gareth Edwards. So like it seemed like, oh, that could be an indication like he's no longer on the project. And sure enough, that ended up being the case.
And you didn't want to mention it because you didn't want to be a muckraker, but God damn it, you were right.
Yeah, you know, it's just one of those things. I should have not stayed quiet.
So during this time, Rian Johnson and J.J. Abrams were both rumored to be directing the film. And then on September 12th, the news dropped. J.J. Abrams, oh my God, is directing Episode 9. That's fucking weird.
Yeah. You know, it's another one of those type of Ron Howard choices at this point, you know? Like, it's a comfort level thing, it seems. I don't think Force Awakens is a bad movie. Like, you know, I've got my little quirks with it, but, like, there's nothing brave about going back to that well.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was a choice made out of necessity, not out of, like, if they could pick anybody they wanted. This is a guy who already knows everyone at the company, knows how things are supposed to work, knows how to fit their timetable, started these characters, knows the basic trajectory of where they're going to go, so he can write something and direct something really fast. Whereas if you pulled in someone completely from the outside, you got to catch them up to speed, then have them write it, then have them direct it. There's just not enough time.
Yeah, I mean, the production cycles are a lot quicker than they were than the prequels, you know, which took 3 years, and these are, you know, 2 years between films. And, you know, a lot more complicated post stuff. So, yeah, you're right. Like, they did need to get somebody in there. And, you know, the funny thing is if going way back in the history of this whole thing, is J.J. Abrams was famously, like, a tough negotiation getting him on board Episode 7. Yeah. You know, he wanted to hold out. He wanted to do all the bad robot, like, office, you know, post stuff back in Los Angeles where his offices are, and, you know, he was insisting on that sort of thing and, like, a certain level of creative control. And let that be a lesson to everybody when it comes to your creative pursuits, you know, like, stick to your guns on some things, you know? Like, look where you are. And all of a sudden, J.J. Abrams is the reliable one, and he was the one that was, like, holding out the most, it seems. Hmm.
And Doug, I agree with everything you said there, except for the part about he knows where the characters are going. He doesn't fucking know shit.
Fair point.
He's flying by the seat of his pants.
He has a better idea than maybe a complete stranger.
Oh, yeah. He knows the actors, and that's what's important. And I do respect what he does in terms of his visual aspects and so on. But my God, I am so tired of this writing style that follows him everywhere he goes. With just that the mystery box needs some more, pal. It's such a great place to start, but it's a terrible place to like to go to. We've never seen J.J. Abrams finish a storyline ever, as far as I know. I could be wrong about that. I never watched, what is it, Alias? Is that his television show before Lost?
Yeah, I mean, and he did do Mission Impossible 3, but that was a one-off film that was already in the middle of a series, so the fact that it ended... It didn't, I don't know, like it ended satisfactorily, like as one complete story, but left room for more. Take that for whatever that's worth.
But in a weird way, Mission Impossible 3 was sort of a weird, soft reboot, because it definitely had like a very large gap between 2 and 3, and the series took off from there. But yeah, so well, he kind of did.
But if you look at the end of that movie, it also feels like the end of the Mission Impossible franchise, because he walks off into the sunset with his wife, and it's like, oh, that's the end, and maybe they'll pass it on. But then the money was like, no, you must make a million more, which I'm happy. I like that series. So
with this announcement of JJ, we also got some other announcements. For example, there was no mention of Jack Thorne anywhere. So that writer, gone. Instead, it's JJ with Chris Terrio, or Terrio.
Thanks, Terrio, yeah.
He's done some things. Here are the things he's done. Argo. Whoa, okay. Holy shit. Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. Fuck. God, no. Justice League. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, jury's still out on Justice League. Don't know what to expect there, but.
And he's got screenplay and story by on that one. Story by post-production.
I think it's a good thing. I like the idea of Abrams writing with someone fresh, whereas, like, if I had to guess, like, I don't think Lawrence Kasdan probably gets enough credit for some of the awful callbacks in Force Awakens.
Mm.
I just feel like This will give Abrams an opportunity to not have to sit there like shadowing someone that is now considered a Star Wars legend, you know?
Right.
Like, we may actually get something different out of that just for that sake.
And Terrio, I mean, those DC films aside, those are what they are, which is extremely corporate movies. Argo, that's probably all him, and that was fucking great. So,
yeah.
I think there's a real chance here that we might see the best of Abrams and not even have Abrams hold Abrams back. Maybe. It's a possibility. Anyway.
Yeah. A lot of my initial trepidation has sort of calmed down since, like, now that I realize it's Abrams with someone new. You know, this, like, if you're going to bring someone back, like, the last movie is probably a good way to do that so that you have, like, closure. Like, there's things about that I kind of like the decision in some ways. So I'm not as worried about it as I was initially.
With these substantial changes, with them maybe throwing out everything Trevor's been working on all this time, because he had ample time to make an amazing film, and something went wrong, and I'd kind of love to know what, but the release date has been delayed from May 2019 to December 20th, 2019. And that is it officially, but there's some more unofficial stuff that we've gotten a hold of. According to Deadline, for example, Rian Johnson was offered it and turned it down, which is interesting. I guess, you know, he wanted to do 8. He was happy to do 8, but he also wanted to not be the Star Wars guy. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I've read the loss of Carrie Fisher just after production really got to him, and I don't know if, like, he's prepared to go through that experience again. I guess they got really close, her being a writer herself, and so they kind of commiserated over the script. Apparently she did a lot of script doctoring for this movie, which is really exciting. And it may have just become very personal, so I can understand why someone would want to step away in that sort of situation.
Yeah, that's hard. Hearing him talk about Carrie at Celebration and so on, that is one of the most exciting things to me about this movie, is kind of seeing her. I hope, because, I mean, we all sort of lamented the performance that both Carrie and Harrison gave in Force Awakens. And
yeah.
But from everything we've seen so far, it feels like maybe we're going to get, like, some real Leia on the screen in a way that we didn't before.
Yeah.
And I want that. I really am hoping and praying for that. Now, on the kind of Hollywood news angle of all this whole JJ thing, JJ doing Star Wars twice, that's weird, like, for a lot of reasons, most notably that he has a $10 million obligation to his home studio Paramount, and working with Disney, Disney might actually be seeking damages, or Paramount might actually be seeking damages for this. They're not doing great. They just got a new CEO. They were counting on another Abrams film. He's been with them 11 years, and he's only directed 3 films for them.
Wow.
So, like, being pulled over to Disney like this twice, their public statements have been very understanding, but they must be freaking out over this. In fact, his contract expires summer of next year, and they're expected to renew it because he's J.J. goddamn Abrams.
Huh.
Now, here's some very hot-off-the-presses stuff. Abrams was recently interviewed by BBC, in which he voluntarily brought up that his approach to Episode 9 is going to be different from what he did with The Force Awakens. He said, "Coming back into this world after having done Episode 8, I feel like we need to approach this with the same excitement that we had when we were kids loving what these movies were, and at the same time, we have to take them places that they haven't gone, and that's our responsibility." Sort of implying that, you know, like, yes, he was echoing and felt his obligation was to echo, like, to reboot Star Wars in Force Awakens. And now there is a sense of obligation to do something new.
It's good to hear.
And then going a bit deeper and certainly weirder, a Redditor recently met Abrams and Chris Terrio, I guess just casually. I'm not sure what the circumstance was, but there's a photo to prove that, yes, these people were all together. And they talked about their intentions with the film, you know, very vague, but in a way that is actually, like, more telling than anything else we've read. So here's what the Redditor said. He said, "I worry a bit that the questions I was asking were too leading. I was speaking with Chris, and he was talking about the original trilogy, and I said about how I grew up with the prequel trilogy, and the prequel's more my entry point into Star Wars. I asked about elements of the prequel trilogy coming in 9, and Chris said how 9 unites all of it. He said, 9 definitely makes it feel like they're all happening in the same universe, and there would be prequel trilogy elements in 9. They could be visual or thematic. He didn't overtly say that they would be returning to planets or characters from the prequel trilogy or anything. They say they're going to be brave, and there will be big surprises. I got the impression that JJ felt like he had to refresh previous Star Wars moments for a modern audience in the Force Awakens, and now it feels like they have free rein to do what they want. Apparently, they've had no interference from Kathleen or Pablo or the Lucasfilm story group. Nine unites all three trilogies, bringing everything together. That's all they would tell me.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw that also, Cap. Like, Trevorrow had kind of said the same thing.
Yeah. Star Wars News Net pointed that out. There was a quote which reads, "By the time we get to episode 9, I look at that movie as one movie, as three movies, as six movies, and as nine movies. It's something that needs to honor a story that has been told over a period of 40 years. I don't want to ignore any of it, and I respect all of it." So that's interesting that one movie, in part of what has so far been a very different trilogy, I mean, they've all been quite different, that this would act as an end cap for the three trilogies. It would be the end to a trilogy and also the end to the three trilogies. No small order, not in the least.
No, not at all.
And I feel like maybe that's something we can speculate more on, I guess, as episode 8 resolves, just because we don't really know. Force Awakens was all introductions. And I feel like we don't know the identity of this trilogy at all yet.
Yeah. Last Jedi is going to, in a weird way, introductory is a good way to describe Force Awakens, but almost to characters, and maybe like large concepts like the First Order and the Resistance, but actually giving us like background detail and everything seems to be more the responsibility of Last Jedi from the way Rian Johnson talks about it. So episode 9 tying everything together could have a lot to do with revelations that were given in this upcoming movie, whether that's Rey's relationship to original trilogy characters or, you know, God forbid Snoke's or, you know, whatever the case might be. So we might have a lot better idea of what Terrio and Trevorrow and Abrams are talking about once we see Last Jedi.
Which is a fine segue for us to move over to what new stuff we've learned about Last Jedi. StarWars.com, they celebrated how many views the new trailer got, which was 120 million in 24 hours. They said, "In just two short months, much will be revealed about Rey, Kylo Ren, Finn, General Leia, Luke, and our new friends, the Porgs."
There's so much going on in that one statement.
Yeah.
And it's so, and what's funny is that last portion is probably the biggest one, but it's distracting from what would probably be the more actual important ones.
Right, like how that list had a lot of names on it, but it didn't have Poe fucking Dameron in it.
Yeah, it's time to acknowledge this trilogy's big three is Kylo, Finn, and Rey. Like, Poe is not a member of that group. You know, I think he's as significant to this trilogy as, say, Lando Calrissian, and that's not to diminish Lando's, you know, role. But, you know, he's certainly, I don't know, he's like Wedge Antilles with more screen time. Like, it doesn't seem like it goes much further than that, which is unfortunate because he's awesome.
Well, maybe we need to read further into the statement, like even further, which is that they say much will be revealed about these characters.
Yeah, that's another big thing.
So you use a not say in Poe gonna die.
I'm saying there's nothing to be revealed about Poe. We already know who he is. He's the best damn pilot in the galaxy.
Yeah.
He's
self-proclaimed.
He's got his own comic book, and it's been doing a lot in terms of building who he is.
There might be a lot of fans out there disappointed to hear that there's not more to be revealed about Poe. Specifically, who's he interested in?
Oh, yeah.
What's his love life?
Yeah, the
like,
great
No. He's like, no, don't look over there. There's nothing over there. Stop asking questions. Nothing over there.
Well, we'll see about that. I mean, there's continual hints at the possibility, you know, they could be just hamming it up, but Boyega always talks about the affection between them, so.
Yeah. And, you know, we got some interesting things, too, like, as it turned, Laura Dern's character, like, she's like attracted to like many like alien species, like nothing. So like they'll go there, but they just haven't gone there with Poe yet, or at all,
or gone there with two human actors.
Right. True.
They should just do it. but you know,
they should.
I mean, I don't love fan service. I think fan service it breeds bad fans in a lot of ways. It creates a sense of greater entitlement than we're already struggling with. But right. that's a little bit of fan service they should just fucking do. The world would be a better place for it.
Yeah.
Now we have potentially a bunch of leaks behind the blast doors. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention the blast doors. So if this is your first time listening, we hide all the most spoilerific spoilers safely behind the blast doors. You'll know when it happens, and yeah, we'll be very obvious about it. So if you're brave enough to go behind the blast doors, we'll tell you some things. We're getting close to the threshold by which we might have indicators of, let's call them, the ramparts. Because back when we were getting rumors about The Force Awakens, one of the things that led to the reveal of Han's death was this bizarre summary that talked about a death scene in the ramparts of a castle. And it was all sort of allegory for where we actually were. And as soon as we saw these things that looked like ramparts in Starkiller Base, we knew, oh, fuck, Han is going to die. And sure enough, he did. So now we've got a couple things where early on in the film, you might be able to say, okay, if this happens, then I know that X, Y, and Z are also going to happen because this person just called it. But we'll see. Again, all behind the blast doors. That's only there if you want it. Peter Serretta, who runs Slash Film, said on a podcast concerning people who'd seen early versions of The Last Jedi that almost everybody has really enjoyed it. Lucasfilm is supposedly over the moon with it. Their singular thing that the singular thing he hears from everyone is that it's very different, and it's going to probably not sit well with some Star Wars fans, that it's going to be divisive, which I thought was a very odd summary of things.
Isn't every Star Wars film divisive?
Well, this fan base, yeah, maybe so.
I would like to meet someone who doesn't think Empire Strikes Back is a great movie.
Would you like to meet them, or would you be really, really, really upset if you met
that
person?
I'd be really fucking annoyed. And you know what? There are things you can tell me about Empire Strikes Back where I can say I can understand that. Like, when I was very young, it was my third favorite because it didn't have a space battle. But then as I got older and came to appreciate various different things about it, it was like it just vaulted into the first position. But yeah. Hmm. Yeah. That's so maybe it's divisive in that way. I won't get into like fights with like a 5-year-old about Empire being boring.
You know, you'll deck him. 5-year-old's mm-hmm. getting a black eye. Serretta said one other thing. He said, one person I know that has seen the movie messaged me after this news came out saying that he's happy that J.J. Abrams is coming on because he, the person who was messaging him, didn't like some of the choices that Rian Johnson went with. This is hearsay from a guy in a privileged position. I mean, these are not fake conversations. These are actual conversations, people who have actually seen the film. But interesting nods, and I'm not sure how to, you know, what to make of it, and or really who these people are, even. You know, who are they that they have opinions that I might even want to care
about?
It
was JJ's agent.
You know, in a weird way, sometimes I think comments like that, just in general about not being satisfied with decisions, and it's better than hearing something is universally loved, because then, you know, you start to wonder, I don't know, you start to wonder if people are just like jumping on a hype train. But when you hear there's like different opinions like that, that seems like something that people are more comfortable speaking out about, which I think is cool.
Hmm. Now, the character who continues to be shrouded in, well, I won't say the most mystery, because Laura Dern's character is also very shrouded in mystery. But let's talk about Benicio del Toro's DJ. At least we know that Laura Dern's character has a name, Admiral Haldo. But DJ has what is allegedly still just like a nickname, and not an in-world nickname even. It's hard to say what exactly they've meant by all the cryptic things they've said regarding his moniker. But we have some insight, maybe. It just makes no fucking sense. So we've seen a pop figure of DJ. We've seen a Star Wars Black Series figure of DJ. And he's got this cute little hat. And on his cute little hat, there's some Arabesh. And it reads, "Don't join." What does that mean?
And it's I couldn't even begin to guess.
And don't join DJ. All right. What? And he can't. I mean, and those letters in Arabesh, they're not, you know, they match up to the letters of the English alphabet, but like they're not, those letters are not called D and J. I don't know what they're called, but you know, so someone wouldn't like, you wouldn't take that phrase on his hat and turn it into a character's name because it doesn't make sense within the context of the world. But products have been put on shelves with this DJ name on it. This is a very strange thing. And how could any title this character would have any degree of like reveal that warrants this strange behavior?
Is he the new Phasma?
I don't know. I think Phasma had a lot more hype at this point going in. I don't know if anyone can quite be the new Phasma. Like, they've done so little marketing of DJ and Holdo. I don't think it's possible for them to even be anything at this point.
Which is weird. It's so goofy. Like,
yeah.
These actors are known and beloved actors that I think people would probably really want to know they were in the movie, but they don't know they're in the movie.
Yep.
And I don't know why they're worried about sharing that they're in the movie. Like, they don't... The fear of spoilers, I'm kind of like, why? Why is this a concern? The marketing for any of the prequels was fine and revealed quite a bit without giving, you know, the film away.
Yeah, and you know, so the only thing confirmed about him is that he's a slicer, which I could be wrong. That term may have originated in the RPG material first, but I know for certainty in the expanded universe it appeared in Heir of the Empire. And like, poor Timothy Zahn, like, I know he gets a lot of credit, but like, Coruscant and like slicers, like his things are appearing in, like, you know, in the prequels and the sequels, like, and I don't know. It's strange that it's like Star Wars will gladly pick and choose like terminology and locations from the old expanded universe, but like their creators don't get as much of a hand in their use. I don't know. I guess that's just a weird thing to me, but it's, well, cool that slicers are a thing.
True. And hopefully Timothy Zahn is well taken care of. You know, slicers, man, slicers are such a thing that every time, and we've recently had some game footage of Battlefront 2 of the single-player campaign released, and every time your character, Verso, tells her droid to, like, hack a terminal, she's like, slice it.
Yep.
Like, the terminology is, I suppose, intentionally being injected.
Yeah, it's cool. Like, it's cool that, like, you know, they're not reinventing the wheel with what has been built up about this universe outside the scope of the films.
Something that people have noticed, and this might be the... this might be one of those things that State of the Empire latches onto that we really, really shouldn't latch onto, but it's interesting. There are black rings on some of these action figures, like on their hands. There's a black ring on Snoke, a black ring on DJ. There's a rumor about Snoke wielding something to do with a black kyber crystal.
I believe Poe has a ring on a necklace chain around his neck.
So maybe there's like a secret society that we're going to learn something about on Canto Bight, maybe, with these rings. That's a very, you know, ruling elite kind of thing. But it's, at this point, we have nothing to back it up aside from this weird little observation.
Yeah. It could just be some sort of like jewelry merchandising tie-in, but it could be significant. Who knows? There's been no further clues.
Now, as for everyone's favorite mystery, Snoke... Rian Johnson said of Snoke, "We got the whole story of Palpatine's rise to power in the prequels, but in the original films, he's exactly what he needs to be, which is just the Emperor. He's a dark force, the scary thing behind the thing. That was entirely how I approached Snoke. I wasn't interested in explaining where he came from or telling his history, except where it serves the story." Now, Andy Serkis said, "I know enough to play the character. This is a trick question. I can just tell. Unfortunately, I can't reveal any of it. The reason behind it, why I can't say too much, is that I really don't want to spoil the mystery of the character, and there is a mystery to the character, and it's coming up soon." So these things are countering one another in weird ways. I guess Johnson's saying he doesn't want to reveal his history, and Serkis is saying there's a mystery that is going to be revealed. So history and mystery, not the same things, but...
Well, is he saying that a mystery is going to be revealed or that there's going to be an answer? Like, oh, we'll reveal the mystery of... You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a difference between revealing a mystery and revealing an answer.
Well, I guess he says he doesn't want to spoil the mystery of the character, and I feel like we've already got a lot of mystery, so surely that must mean a few answers as to, like, his deal. We got one other weird thing about him, which is that Andrew Garfield was being interviewed about being directed by Serkis during the film Breath, and he said that when he met him while filming scenes for The Last Jedi, Serkis was dressed in his performance capture leotard and the required white dots, and even wore faux hair on his face.
Just trying to picture that interview. That must have been a trip.
And like, what does that mean? Was Andrew Garfield confused? Was Serkis doing pickup shots for Planet of the Apes? But he said, you know, during Last Jedi, with hair on his face. Was he doing another alien, maybe? Or is Snoke not Snoke?
Or maybe he's doing his character from Black Panther.
He has a character in Black Panther?
Yeah, in the Marvel movies. He's the guy who gets the vibranium out of Wakanda. And he's got, like, those wicked sideburns or whatever. And maybe that's if they, like, much like how they had to refilm Henry Cavill for Justice League or for Batman v Superman, but he'd already grown a mustache, so they just, like, scanned his face and digitally removed the mustache for these pickup shots. So, like, is it the same thing where it's like, oh, Andy Serkis is recording whatever. Oh, quick, put the sideburns on him because he's doing this character for this Marvel movie instead. I mean, it's owned by Disney, and if he's in one location, couldn't they just, you know what I'm saying? Like, just
yeah, no,
get
and
pickup
I agree
shots
with,
for whatever.
I didn't know any of that, but I feel like I wanted to share that because it's weird, but I feel like most likely Andrew Garfield misassessed that situation there because, like, that's not Snoke. That doesn't make sense. That doesn't make any sense.
Maybe that was just Andy Serkis' get up for the day. Like, he's so associated with it, he just wears, like, motion capture balls all the time. That's why he's so good at those characters.
A couple other things, a couple minor things, Last Jedi stuff. The racing creatures on Canto Bight are called Faethiers. That's another Making Star Wars rumor proven ironclad. I found this in a kid's book. So that's, once again, the children's books have all kinds of weird stuff in them. Just not anything super substantial, but enough to confirm which rumors are and aren't true. And there's a Topps card, a trading card, with an image depicting a crashed X-Wing in the waters of Ahch-To, suggesting that Luke has been stranded there, either intentionally or accidentally. But basically, the reason, you know, he couldn't even be found if he wanted to be found, that might be a thing. It seems like it would have to be some serious creative liberties for this card to be misinterpreted, and we'll link to it on this episode's page, along with anything else of a visual reference needed. And one final thing. Jason Fry, the author of The Last Jedi novel, posted a tweet with a stack of books that helped him complete The Last Jedi novel. And it is a lot of Star Wars books, but also some really weird non-Star Wars books in the stack, including The Little Island, Waters of Eternal Youth, the novelization of Gremlins, and best of all, the novelization of Howard the Duck.
I mean, that's definitely the one, like, taking all the attention. And so, like, the Gremlins one's got to be Porgs. I mean, right? I mean,
maybe. And does that mean that there's a secret to be revealed about the Porgs?
Maybe.
I mean, here's what else we have. We have the new Phasma book. We got Bloodline, Inferno Squad, the Battlefront book, some Star Wars Aftermath stuff, the Ahsoka novel, which is interesting.
I have my guess on why that one's there.
Yeah.
I think we got stuff. Some crystal bleeding coming up.
Yeah, that crystal bleeding has been in so much media. We'll be talking about that in our next episode where we're discussing sort of the latest stuff happening with Star Wars books. It's much like how we've seen the process so far, especially with Rogue One, how the story group will have elements for these major tentpole theatrical productions, and then aspects of them, mythos aspects of them, will be seeded for years prior, just like maybe a note of, hey, just be sure to do something with the Imperials collecting kyber crystals, and it'll just build and snowball over time until we've got all this backstory for the, you know, the project of the Death Star without even really realizing what was happening. But Howard the Duck, I don't know, and I'm holding the copy of it right here. I've never read the novelization, but I have it. I don't really know what there is of significance to that, but maybe we'll find out soon. Now, the other big thing, the other really, really, really big thing is the Han Solo film. We still know very, very, very little about it. It's been kind of a journey ever since Ron Howard took the reins. Filming has kind of wrapped. There was a cast party ahead of the normal one since everyone's schedules are all over the place from the unexpectedly prolonged shooting. There's speculation that even though we'd heard that Lord and Miller's footage was very, very usable, Howard actually reshot more of the movie than was initially expected. And he's been editing this whole time, so they say. And there's a substantiated rumor that as a result, there's a cut of a teaser for the film that's done. And sources are saying we're likely to see it soon. And considering that the film actually is coming out in May, it has not been delayed. That's very likely. We could see it on Thor. We could see it on The Last Jedi. In fact, if we didn't see it on The Last Jedi, I'd be very surprised. And at the time of this party, the film was still being called Untitled Han Solo Film, but all the crew jackets said Solo. Surprise, surprise, that is, in fact, the name of the movie. It's called Solo, A Star Wars Story. But in the interim, we did attempt to come up with some titles that the film might be called, because there's a lot of opportunities with a Han Solo film. Because this Solo thing, it's kind of obvious. It's just calling it Solo, sure. But what if it had, like, an adventure serial title? Or Matt, you were hoping to have something like Han Solo at Star's End.
Yeah, I wanted a nice pulp Brian Daly title.
So we had a little bit of fun shooting back and forth some ideas. Like, for example, Han Solo and the Spice Slaver's Bargain. Like something with a little bit of energy like that.
Han Solo and the Scoundrel's Lament.
Or Han Solo and the Coruscant Bounty.
Or Han Solo and the Seduction of the Minot Queen.
Han Solo and the Greedo Connection.
Han Solo and the Cult of 45s.
Han Solo, Wrath of Dengar.
Han Solo and the Quest for Opie's Credits.
Han Solo and the Kingdom of the Crystal Porg.
Han Solo and the Consultation of the Bones.
The Han Solo Chronicles, Episode 1, The Scoundrel, the Gambler, and the Wookiee, A Star Wars Story.
Han Solo, Into Darkness.
Han, Mibuki.
Solo, Tell That to Kanji Club.
Young Han Solo and the Mystery of the Carbonite Conundrum.
Han Solo, I'll See You in Hell.
Han Solo, Just a Little Higher.
Which is the Judd Apatow stoner film for Han Solo.
Han, Our Expectations Are Solo.
And the one that ended up being truest, Solo, A Minimalist Approach.
They should have gone with the new holiday special, Star Wars Story. Tag and Bink meet Han Solo.
And what's crazy about that is, like, the next day, after Matt made that joke, we got Tag and Bink are going to be in fucking Han Solo.
That's the craziest freaking thing. Out of all the things, and I gotta say, like, once I saw that it was, like, John Kasdan's influence there, that, like, he grew up a Tag and Bink fan, I was like, that's pretty cool.
So, if you're not familiar with Tag and Bink, I don't blame you. It's it's the fringes of the Star Wars universe. Matt, why don't you take the lead on refreshing everyone's memory about Tag
they
and
were,
Bink?
They were like a non-canon Abbott and Costello of the Star Wars universe. Like, they were two dopey stormtroopers that, like, somehow always got involved in, like, a lot of the original trilogies, like, big events, and, you know, were around to kind of, like, mess them up, I guess, so to speak. Just to give you an example, like, Manny Bothans was actually, like, a character. Like, his name was Manny Bothans. So it was just one guy died. It was Manny Bothans died. Get it? It was awful. Like, no, I'm sorry. Awful's not the right word. Because they were of a certain type of fun slapstick, like... Like, well, strike that word awful from the record.
The Manny Bothans gag is the goofiest, dumbest thing about it. Because on the other hand, like, Dag and Binker, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, but in the Star Wars universe. Like, that's what it is.
Right.
And they actually were used to explain continuity problems, not just to, like, do hijinks in the background as well. Like, whereas things like Manny Bothans, things like them finding Chewie's metal after Yavin, which... Obviously, thanks to the Chewie comic, we know that's not canon. But there are aspects of it that actually could be canon if they chose to make them so. For example, they were the two stormtroopers having a casual conversation while Obi-Wan Kenobi deactivated the shield generator. But they weren't actually stormtroopers. They were on the blockade runner and had stowed aboard the Death Star, just trying to like lay low, like knocked out some stormtroopers and wore some armor and got in there, all Ezra Bridger style. And then they tried to escape the Death Star to go to Alderaan, and then just as they were doing that, Alderaan exploded, and that's why when the Falcon appears in the debris field of Alderaan, there's just like these random TIE fighters out there.
Yeah, it's silly, but so getting back to Solo, like I make that joke, and the next day, Ron Howard tweets a picture of John Kasdan and the assistant director from the film dressed up as Imperial officers and identifies that they're playing Tag and Bink. Like, I don't know how, like, somehow I conjured that from the Force. Like, I was very, like, Darth Plagueis there, like, in the old EU, kind of creating Anakin out of his Sith meditations, and I created Tag and Bink with a joke.
You did it.
I did it.
You're very intuitive, Matt. You're very intuitive.
only if I could have like somehow evoked a nice pulp style title for the Solo film, because Solo, a Star Wars story, sets a very bad precedent.
Yeah, it's boring and it sucks, and the logo's boring and it sucks.
Yeah, and how do you like? So from that, how could you? You know, the funny thing is like, how limiting that gets. Because now how can you make a Kenobi film that isn't named Kenobi? How can you make a Fett film that's not named Fett? It's very boring, and like, it would seem strange if they decided not to follow that naming system suddenly. And Solo, a Star Wars story, could work, maybe a 2 out of 10 on the scale of creativity, but Kenobi and Fett and all those other ones are going to be like a 1 out of 10.
Yeah, it's, I really hope they change it up immediately. Like, and you know that it's been untitled this whole time because they didn't know what to do, and they were focus grouping, like they had to have.
Ugh, the worst two words in the like movie industry. I don't know. It's frustrating because if there is a series that you can actually, if you're that worried about money and interest, that you can actually take chances and have it not blow up in your face, it's Star Wars. If this movie was called Han Solo and the Kessel Run, or Han Solo at Star's End, or Han Solo and, you know, whatever, nobody is not going to see this movie because of the title. I don't understand how they think that that can be something that turns people away. Quite frankly, when they added a Star Wars story to the end of Rogue One, like, that in any other franchise could have turned people away because it's a dumb name. Like, a Star Wars story. I'm still not sold on that phrasing. But notice, it was still okay, because nobody's not going to the theater to see a Star Wars movie based on a weird title. Like,
well, also, they de-emphasized the Star Wars story immediately.
Yep.
But now they're stuck with it.
Yep. Like, people went to go see Attack of the Clones, and yes, when that title... Heck, Phantom Menace 2. When those titles were announced, everybody... I recall everyone online thinking that it was a weird title. But as it went along, and we saw the movies, like, guess what? Everybody went to go see those movies. Even when reviews weren't good, everyone went to go see those movies.
Yep, I was in middle school, maybe. Yeah, and I was like, ugh, no.
Yep. Yeah, so was I. Attack of the Clones offended me. Like, the title is so bad. But then it just, you're like, it's Star Wars. Like, you know, even The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi are very pulpy. But you see those movies because that's what they're trying to do. And the movies speak for themselves in most cases. And then at this point, the movies don't even have to speak for themselves. The series speaks for itself. So I don't think you have to worry about a title that's too crazy, you know? But, you know, minimalism. Because they're nervous.
Yeah. It's crazy how many doubts they have when they have no reason to have doubts. They have the freedom to take risks here, and they feel like they don't. I mean, they're playing with a lot of money. So much money. I get it. But they are walking less of a tightrope than probably anyone else in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, there's been a lot of changes and shakeups in this film that we've learned of since Ron Howard started shooting this movie. We were really, really worried about Bradford Young, the cinematographer, because he's got great vision, and you know, he was with Lord Miller, and oh my God, like, he was a huge... Their pitch to him is what took him, a very serious filmmaker, to do this Star Wars maybe kind of comedic film. But he's still on. He's still attached to the project, which is amazing. However, there's other folks that aren't. Like Michael K. Williams of HBO's The Night Owl. He was going to play an unknown half-human, half-animal-looking character. He was cut due to scheduling conflicts. And they needed him to come back for extensive reshoots, but it wasn't going to happen, so he's been written out. He said specifically that he felt great about what he created with the directors that he worked with. We created a kick-ass character, in my opinion. I'm proud of it, but it is what it is. I don't think that me not being in the Star Wars family is final. I left with a very good taste in my mouth about the whole family. I hope that I left a good taste in their mouth.
Nice.
He also accidentally revealed the name of Emilia Clarke's character. He said he was the character he was playing was a link between Han Solo and Emilia's character, Kira, which was spelled K-I-R-A. But Making Star Wars suggests that it's actually a misquote. The name is Kura, K-U-R-A, and the people who originally reported it changed it around. But it would have been interesting if it was K-I-R-A, because that was actually one of the original names for Rey's character in early draft of The Force Awakens. A character that's possibly replacing Williams is Paul Bettany. His presence on the film was revealed by a tweet from Ron Howard. They've worked together on The Da Vinci Code and A Beautiful Mind, but a source told Deadline that he's doing an entirely new character, not just doing Michael K. Williams' character.
Interesting.
So Ron has been tweeting so much weird stuff. We'll post some of the best things. There's an R2 unit that's been turned into a hibachi. There's what looks like maybe a sewer. There's what's definitely the spice mines of Kessel, which unfortunately actually just look like a standard 90s Star Trek sci-fi cave set. And this weird blotchy turbine thing with the caption, "Secrets to uncover and challenges to face for a young hashtag Han Solo."
You know, what's funny about that one is it gave me some vibes from Arrival. Like, not really, but kind of. And just, I mean, Bradford Young, I believe that was one of his films.
Yep.
So, like, I was just like, oh, that's cool. But, yeah, that's really all I got from it. There's very little else for me to glean.
We have a few details about the film, like, aside from Ron's tweets. but generally, we still know very, very little. Making Star Wars says that the movie takes place over three time periods over 7 years and features Kessel and Corellia in the movie. We will see the Millennium Falcon, but it won't look like the ship that we know. There's a link that I'll include on this episode's page where it shows a image of the type of ship that the Falcon is as it was portrayed briefly in the prequels, which is with a different paint job. So Making Star Wars says, the Falcon is brand new and owned by Lando. It has blue detailing all over it with a white base coat. And we see it doing cargo work, what it was actually made for. There's an attachment that hooks onto the ship's front forks that elongates the front of the ship. It looks seamless but can also be detached. But you know what? I'm sick of talking about Star Wars. Let's talk about Willow.
Willow.
Ron's been tweeting a lot, obviously. The Ron Howard Willow connection is going to be, we're going to see so much crazy Willow stuff next year when Ron's promoting this movie and it's the 30th anniversary of Willow. It's going to be nuts. Someone tweeted to him, a person named Blockridge 1977. Okay, so now that you're back in the Lucasfilm saddle, when are we getting that Willow sequel? And Ron said, glad you're asking for one. I directed Warwick Davis for the first time in 30 years today. It made me happy. And that same day, that very same day, the energy was strong. The bones were foretelling a great many things. Val Kilmer was doing an AMA and was asked, will there be a sequel to Willow? Could you ask the directors and writers for one? And Kilmer said, I would love it. And every time I see George Lucas, he leans in and he says, we were right. Because he wanted to do a take on The Hobbit, and they fought him all the way. Didn't give us the distribution we needed, but George has asked Ron Howard to do the next Star Wars, which is that's an interesting way that Val's interpreting it. So there you go. At least I think George still gets to approve of things, even though he sold it for a galaxy's far, far away's worth of cash. Then another thing happened on Twitter with Leland Chi, the keeper of the holocron, guider of all Lucasfilm continuity. A user named Scone Trooper asked, "Do you track anything other than Star Wars and Indiana Jones, LucasArts properties, for instance?" And Leland Chi replied, "Long ago, I gathered materials for Willow and the Seventh Tower book series, but nothing became of it." So I asked him on that same thread, because we have so many different quests that we're on for the Willow lore and knowledge about the production and background information. I said, "With that canned Willow animated series, was there a production Bible developed?" And he responded, "First I've heard of it. Not to say it wasn't a thing at some point. I've just never seen anything." So if such a document exists, oh, it is buried deep in the Lucasfilm archives. If Leland Chi was digging around for information on Willow and didn't even come across it.
Right.
Well, said he was gathering materials as well. I just wonder how much of that is there, you know?
And it's a fair question. I mean, there's enough production art for very specific things to suggest that there must be at least a dossier of official notes on some ideas, I feel. But is it lost to time? It very well might be. And as for Willow's 30th anniversary, well, we are still hard at work putting things together to give him a proper birthday celebration. But we can't say anything just yet, and we will reveal it as soon as we can. And hopefully, I suppose, hopefully we can reveal something, because there's a lot of moving parts here, and this is a very, very tricky little project. But we'll keep you informed. Even if it doesn't happen, I'll tell you what went wrong. Thus ends Willow Watch. Now, before we open the blast doors, we got to do two things. We got to talk about how you can support State of the Empire and make sure that this show continues. And also, there's some interesting news about other stuff beyond episodes 8, 9, and the Han Solo film. But let's talk about that first one first. You make State of the Empire possible. We are entirely listener-supported and rely on you to keep this show and all the shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive. If you back us on Patreon, even a dollar makes a world of difference and keeps us consistently funded every single month. That's patreon.com/nerdyshow. It funds all the Nerdy Show Network, and you get a ton of perks, even at a dollar, including early releases, sometimes early releases of State of the Empire content, as a matter of fact, and deleted stuff from this show. Of course, go higher than a dollar, and now you're talking some bigger, badder, better rewards, but I'll let you find all those over on Patreon. You can give us a one-time donation at nerdyshow.com/support. But also, if you're buying Star Wars stuff on the internet and you're doing it through Amazon.com, you should first go to nerdyshow.com/Amazon and bookmark our link there so it becomes your permanent link for Amazon. Because if you shop through our links, anything you buy gives back to the Nerdy Show Network. It's as easy as that. And if you get something really cool, write into us about it. We'll give you a shout-out here on the show for supporting Nerdy Show, for buying something awesome. If you don't have any funds to throw our way, we totally understand, but please do consider some free options. You can rate and review us on iTunes, which is a huge help. That is still the number one source for podcast discovery, getting and acquiring things, judging the quality of stuff. But there is a new platform as well, which is actually easier to use. You should definitely check out. It's called Podchaser. You can go to podchaser.com, and you can not only rate and review series, but you can rate and review specific episodes and add in tags. So, for example, you could type in Ron Howard, Willow, Han Solo, Warwick Davis, Episode 9, Tag and Bink, and when you search for those things, you'd actually find this episode there, which is something that you absolutely cannot do on iTunes. If you're really looking for that niche discovery for like a particular episode, it can't happen on iTunes, but it can happen on Podchaser. That's what it was built for. So, like I said, some stuff from beyond what we know so far. There's a piece of news that came out August 17th. It hit hard and then faded into obscurity. No one's talking about it. We don't know what the fuck is going on. And we've been talking for a long time about an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie. Everyone says it's not going to happen. Jason Aaron did some great Obi-Wan Kenobi solo stories in his run on Star Wars, the comic book. But Hollywood Reporter said that Stephen Daldry, the Oscar-nominated director of Billy Elliot and The Hours, is in early talks to do an Obi-Wan film. This comes from unnamed sources who said the talks were at their earliest conceivable point and the project has no script. Daldry would oversee the development and writing with Lucasfilm. Hollywood Reporter also took care to add that Lucasfilm is still looking to do a Yoda film and a Boba Fett film, which Boba Fett, not so weird. The Yoda film, I never believed, honestly. They were saying Yoda film in the same breath as a Jabba the Hutt film, and I'm like, you're out of your mind. I mean, we know that there's great solo stories to be told for both those characters, but given how safe they're playing it, the universe is not ready, and that's honestly not even remotely what I want to see first, so I hope that's not a thing. But what do you guys think about this, like about Stephen Daldry coming out of the woodwork to do a Star Wars movie, an Obi-Wan film, no less?
It's funny because if you told me Stephen Daldry was doing a Star Wars movie, I'd be like, oh, I'm intrigued. If you told me he was doing Obi-Wan, not as intrigued. It's not exactly who I would like. The energy just doesn't seem to be... not that I want the Obi-Wan film to be this like action shoot-em-up type movie, but I feel like I could get more out of like a Stephen Daldry movie about like a Old Republic era master Padawan relationship. I mean, I feel like he does like personal relationships well, and I don't know if the Obi-Wan film is necessarily like, unless it was like Logan between like a young Luke and Obi-Wan, I don't know if I'd want to see. I don't know, and I wouldn't even want to see that, because that makes the mystery of old Ben living out beyond the Dune Sea a little too close to Luke.
I mean, do we even know for sure when this takes place?
Nope. We know nothing. We know nothing.
So true. For all we know, it could be a child Obi-Wan being trained by Qui-Gon. Get old Liam Neeson back.
That would make him a great choice.
Maybe we just solved the problem.
Yeah.
It goes even further back in time. Now we got to get a young Liam Neeson the same way we got a young Obi-Wan with Ewan McGregor. So who's like the young Liam Neeson?
CG Liam Neeson?
Yep.
Dude, what if they got Ewan McGregor to play young Qui-Gon?
No. Ewan McGregor's face being CG'd onto like a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah, like Benjamin Button it.
Uh-huh. Like, we get some weird looking shit.
I mean, that would be neat to see. To see a director like that exploring the prequel era world of Star Wars.
Or, dude, what if it was just a buddy cop movie with Obi-Wan in the desert, but his buddy is the ghost of Qui-Gon Jinn?
Oh shit!
Yeah.
Okay.
Like. Okay, I could see that. You know, like, now you got me excited, though, about the concept of the Stephen Daldry movie being, like, pre-Phantom Menace, because I'm still waiting for this line of this Star Wars saga narrative. Like, the old expanded universe had a good beginning cap to sort of, like, give me the overall... you know, mega saga between good and evil, you know, whether it was like the ancient Sith and then like the Infinite Empire before it, and all kind of like made sense and came together. But now if you watch or read the current canon, like the beginning has very little context for what's going on. I feel like nothing's explained to you until you get to A New Hope. Phantom Menace just kind of throws you into it. Like no explanation of the Force, no whatever. And like I would like some sort of movie that gives you like a really good foundation for what the Force means to these prequel era Jedi. And also context for like, you know, evil in that galaxy. And I think Stephen Daldry could do a cool movie like that. Like
he directed Billy Elliot and Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, both about young boys, coming of age story. So why not a young Kenobi coming of age story where he's got to decide, is he going to stay at home or is he going to go train to be a Jedi before he gets too old and got to make a life a life choice at such a young age? That sounds more and more like something that would be in his wheelhouse.
Yeah, I think that's a very exciting sounding project, and he would be a good choice for it. There's probably a lot of people would be a good choice for that type of movie, but if that's the Kenobi movie we're talking about, like, I'm totally on board.
This is interesting. I hadn't really considered these possibilities.
Yeah. You could even give me that sort of context I'm looking for in a movie that doesn't necessarily take place before Phantom Menace. Like one that is... I could get it in a, you know, Kenobi and young Anakin movie. Or even a Kenobi movie that takes place in between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. But like, I really feel like I don't know. There's just very little foundation in the prequel era right now that the old comics and old books used to do a good job filling in for George Lucas. And now there's nothing. There's a Darth Maul comic, and there's an Anakin and Obi-Wan comic, and there's a Mace Windu comic, and none of them seem to add too much to it.
Nope, they're stories. They're good stories, but they're stories. They're just there.
Yes. Yeah, and it's just it's an era lacking in something, in solid ground.
And do either of you know who else was in Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close?
Never even heard of it.
Wasn't that Tom Hanks?
Well, I don't know if Tom Hanks was also in it, but one of the actors in the film was none other than Lor San Tekka himself, Max von Sydow.
Shit.
Man. There you go.
There's a character, man.
Speaking of which, when are we going to get more about Lor San Tekka? He's just dead.
No,
he dead, yo.
You're going to get that in the Poe Dameron comics, but as to why not in the films, I mean, I've mentioned this before, but I feel that Lor San Tekka is still one of the biggest mysteries of the production of The Force Awakens, because Max von Sydow was announced very early on and was brought in to that massive, highly publicized script reading that first happened. He was there in the room. He has no lines in the movie.
Wait, we're talking about... wait a minute. So there's a mystery around Lor San Tekka. There's a mystery around Snoke. I've always said, what if Snoke was a clone trooper? What if Lor San Tekka was an old clone trooper?
I think Lor San Tekka is a J.J. Abrams mystery box that got chopped up when... I mean, that beginning went through so many iterations. You know, the lightsaber flying through space and all that other stuff. I think that character just got minimized to a point of uselessness, and it will only be comics that we learn more about his connection to the overall story.
Shame.
Yeah, damn shame. Max von Sydow is fucking amazing.
Shame.
Anyway, we got to go behind the blast doors, so if we're seeing you later, we'll see you later, and we'll probably see you in 2 weeks with an all-new State of the Empire. But for those of you brave enough, it's time to open the blast doors.
Open the blast doors! Open the blast doors!
You ready for the weird shit?
I'm always ready for weird shit.
We got one thing from Han Solo, one teeny tiny thing. It's very likely Darth Vader's in that movie. I know. Like, just stop, folks. There was a cancellation notice for Spencer Wilding, who plays Vader these days, in late July, and the reason given publicly was that he's filming the newest film in the Star Wars universe. There's only one movie that could be. I suppose, unless there's an Anakin Force Ghost where he's Vader, but that's impossible because Vader did not get turned into a Force Ghost. Anakin got turned into a Force Ghost.
Also, I mean, you know, there was that Force Awakens concept art of, like, the dual, you know, Anakin and Vader Force Ghost thing that was going around. Mm. But they wouldn't have used that idea. Like, they wouldn't have shown us that concept art if they planned on using that in the plot.
One would assume, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, if Vader in passing in Solo isn't the worst thing, but it's also like, come on, like, Han Solo is not a part of that world until he becomes a part of that world.
Are you kidding? In this new movie, like, Vader's going to, like, kill his parents. Like, ugh, God damn it.
Let's just keep setting our expectations catastrophically low and be pleasantly surprised, I hope.
All right, yeah. All right, I'll step down from Red Alert.
Or they're going to have, like, Han Solo's parents, and he's, like, hiding somewhere, and Han Solo's parents are working for the Rebellion, and he has to witness the interrogate. He's going to see Darth Vader interrogate his own dad the way he's going to be interrogated in Empire Strikes Back.
It's like
because it's like poetry,
it rhymes.
Stop. This is... You know what, Doug, this is my version of my suggestion that they're going to end the Solo movie with them going into the Mos Eisley Cantina and Ewan McGregor is CG playing Obi-Wan Kenobi, and that's how they announce the Kenobi film. Like, that's your version of what I'm going through right now.
Right. Yeah, So this is a good source that says that Vader's going to somehow be in the film, whereas any Obi-Wan appearance would be just, like, pure speculation still at this point, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So that's all we got
for
Solo.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Darth Vader in a Han Solo spinoff movie is equally dumb as putting Obi-Wan in it, but
You gotta sell damn movie tickets. Gotta put a shot of Vader in the teaser so people know it's a Star Wars.
I think Greedo and Han are gonna be like brothers. They're gonna like Sabretooth Wolverine them.
They already put Greedo in like in Phantom Menace, right? Where it's like, one of these days, Greedo, you're gonna get yours or whatever. Like, it's gonna be the same thing. They're gonna call back to it's gonna be teenage Greedo, and he's just like, damn it, Greedo, you keep acting this way. One of these days, someone's gonna like, this is gonna be a, like in every trilogy, there's always gonna be a thing with Greedo just being a dick.
And Dr. Evazan and Ponda Baba, like, they're gonna run into Han outside the cantina and continue to repeat that you watch yourself. Like, it will have them, they've had that conversation three times, like right before they like get there.
Give me a break, we just got back from Jedha and holy shit, we barely escaped. Yeah,
and boy are our arms tired.
Oh man, were they the stand-up routine going off to figuring Dan?
Yeah, it was open mic night at the Mos Eisley cantina, and Ponda Baba had a great set. Then Dr. Evazan had to start a fight.
Oh, don't you hate it when your friends get drunk? When you just ask them out and you're like, hey, I'm going to do a set, you know, like, you know, just come out and see me. But they get roaring drunk and you got to be like, hey, man, chill out. Chill out. And he's like, fuck you. And then a Jedi slices your arm off. Hate it when that happens. Fuck.
I hate it. It's the worst.
Good thing your friend's a doctor.
He's probably like a doctor in linguistics.
No, that's he's also a performer, but he's a more down and out performer. He's really jealous of Ponda Baba, and so like it's like Dr. Demento. That's Dr. Everson's thing.
Isn't he supposed to be like a cosmetic guy?
Who even knows anymore? I've got the ultimate guide to the Star Wars universe right here.
I thought he was doing like illegal facial reconstructions and shit for criminals.
Well, I think that was what it was in Tales of the Mos Eisley Cantina, but half that shit doesn't exist anymore.
Which, in a weird way, is probably the biggest shame of abolishing the old EU, is all that great backstory for, like, those characters, like, on-screen characters like that. It really fleshed out that world quite a bit. I thought that's what that certain point of view book was going to be, which it does have some elements of that, but the stories are too short and too quick and too weird sometimes.
And we'll be talking much more about that in the next episode of State of the Empire. I've almost got him. Page 133. I'm almost there. Here we go. Dr. Cornelius Evazan is a murderous smuggler and partner of Ponda Baba. Once a promising surgeon, he is now notorious for conducting cruel medical experiments. Hideously scarred by a bounty hunter, Evazan has death sentences in 12 systems. Oh, funny. I didn't know that. Hanging over... blah, blah, blah. Obi-Wan has a confrontation. Okay, sure. That's it. That's all we know. Anyway... Episode 8. Now, I mentioned that there was a source that gave out a bunch of interesting information, but first we have a little bit of our own speculation. There have been a lot of graphics going around, including the main poster for The Last Jedi, that shows a very grim Luke Skywalker. There's a very fancy action figure of him with just a terrible scowl, and he's so angry. And we're making jokes about evil Luke. Did Luke go dark side? You know, what might that be like? But then we saw... this big standy thing for promoting the film in IMAX. It's like a gateway you walk through, and it's got two sides to it. On the one side, there's a montage of the hero characters with Luke. And on the other side, there's all the dark side First Order characters also with Luke. So,
and I said, it made me think of that old opening crawl. There are heroes on both sides.
I mean, it opens up a lot of discussion. How much, like... I don't know what you call it, a balancing act, or is Luke going through in this movie, do you think? I mean, do you think we're going to find out that he went dark, that he's going dark, that he thinks that, like, terms like that don't mean anything anymore? Like, I don't know what to think anymore, to be quite honest.
Well, I think we initially assumed that he'd exiled himself because of shame, perhaps, for what happened, but... I think he might blame himself for this in a way that is not what we initially suspected. That maybe, or maybe the death of his students pushed him to a place where he was actually going to kill his nephew and then spared him. There's a possibility that the kyber crystal around his neck, should it be back in a lightsaber, would be red because Luke bled his own saber. That's tricky. It's very, very tricky how to judge this. But I guess don't be surprised if... we see a somewhat evil Luke Skywalker, because definitely the conversation is being had about the balance between light and dark, but I don't think the general public, or even ourselves, are prepared for how dark he might actually be.
I mean, are we thinking force choking? Are we thinking lightning? Are we thinking, like, just that he's... you think we'll see that darkness on screen, or he'll just tell us about that darkness?
Oh, I think we'll see it. I think he'll slip. I think he'll freak the fuck out, and he'll do something. I think he'll shoot some lightning, and you'll be like, oh my god, Luke Skywalker is Emperor Palpatine, you know?
Interesting.
We've already seen somebody choke somebody in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, but at that point, though, you're just wondering if he's going that way, right? Leaves that question open, you know, like, ooh, he's kind of becoming like Daddy. And that's actually one of the triumphs of the Machete Order, on a slight tangent, is that, you know, you leave that question, you know, you find out about Vader's relationship to Luke, and then you watch the fall of Anakin Skywalker, and then you come back, and the first thing you see is Luke sort of in a Vader shape coming into Jabba's palace and then straight up choking some Gamorrean guards. It's like, oh, shit. Is father like son.
Yeah, it'd be the first time you see any Jedi dressed in black, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was going through something there, you know? Like, I think the whole, like, not having been formally trained really, really showed, or you could read into it anyway, in Jedi, and certainly, I think we're going to see a lot of that. I think, like Luke went into this with a certain degree of ignorance, and I'm not sure why Obi-Wan Kenobi's ghost didn't better prepare him, but he was trained by the best, but he wasn't trained for very long.
Right. And I mean, it's kind of crazy when you think about it. Like, Yoda and Obi-Wan aren't showing him how to choke people. He's learning that on his own. And he doesn't even do the choking motions. He literally just points at the guards and they're grabbing their throats. Like, it's a really, really incredible sequence when you think about the, like, implications of what's going on there.
Yeah. So I think that's the Luke. That's the Luke we left on. That's the Luke we're seeing in this movie, right? That's got to be what's happening here.
Yeah.
So, here we go. Here's the weirdest shit. This is from Making Star Wars France. This was put out in September. This is from an unnamed source, right? It was basically a bunch of bullet points, and I had to translate this in Google Translate, so it's a little clunky. I've tried to reword it so it makes a little bit more sense. And what casts a seed of doubt on it immediately is that this same reporter or same source said that the trailer would arrive the Monday before Halloween. Obviously, we got the trailer much sooner than that. He says he's working in the film industry, but not for Lucasfilm. The film changes the rules of the Star Wars universe, blurring the boundaries between right and wrong, and is Empire Strikes Back in terms of quality. Does he mean quality, or does he mean aspects? I don't know, because the translation is imperfect. The opening scene after the scrolling text is the Falcon jumping into hyperspace after leaving Dakar. Immediately afterwards, Star Destroyers arrive and attack the Resistance. The first word of the film is "Sir," and the last is "I'll kill him." So, if any of those things happen, you know to heed what comes next. We'll see. The Ren Knights are in the film. They're the former students of Luke. Force ghosts appear, but only vocally, including Hayden Christensen. Chewie is not happy to see Luke at their reunion. DJ betrays Finn and Rose by hacking the data from the old stormtrooper, that's in quotes, to discover the location of the base of the Resistance in the third and final act. I don't know who he's talking about. Maybe Finn, or I'm not really sure how to read into what that means exactly. Mustafar appears in the film. The Falcon doesn't get destroyed. So then we have character notes, and they're sometimes really simple thing like Phasma doesn't die, Hux doesn't die and kills three minor characters. Leia dies and would not see Luke, which is contrary to a number of things that we've heard. But not impossible because, if John Boyega is saying that Leia lives forever in the Star Wars universe, he wasn't necessarily in those scenes. He doesn't necessarily know what is actually going to happen. So I don't know about that, really. I don't think they're going to kill her, but on the other hand, that would certainly be a graceful way to make sure that they don't have to deal with the ambiguity of where the hell is that character in the next film. Then we got Luke. his first word in the film would be no. He's become very powerful. He'd frighten Rey and try to teach in moderation. He would not be present in the last act of the movie. Rey, here's how this thing reads. It's very weird. The so-called Look would have been surprised by discovering Rey's parents. He thought she was Luke's daughter. I don't know what that means. That sentence is all over the place. So I don't know whose Look. I don't know what's the famous Look from the films or the trailer. Were we talking about Luke's expression?
I don't know.
Rey can't swim, and when she finds herself underwater, it would test her faith in the Force. Now, to me, that's one of the most telling things from this, because this is before we saw the trailers, and we know that Rey has a bunch of water scenes, and it looks like she's struggling, and it looks like that's totally a thing that's happening.
Yep.
Kylo Ren. The last scene of the film would show Kylo holding Rey in his arms. As he speaks, we will see the consequences of other sequences. The Resistance is weakened, as is the First Order. He would have a monologue at the end of the film. It would be about the galaxy destroyed by war. It must finally come to an end. All Snoke and Luke would care about was the Order, but what will really help the galaxy to find peace is freedom. Finn would earn a lot of money at gambling and the table at Canto Bite. He would like to cash in his chips, but Rose stops him because they have a mission. Finn's protests are hysterical.
I believe it.
Snoke, his story would not be explained. He won't fight. He's not the real leader of the First Order. It's someone you know well.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, I don't know about that. He's supreme leader. Like, we're gonna really puppet a puppet master for real. I mean, and what's more, like he won't fight. Does that not count what happened in the trailer?
Yeah, I mean, they pulled that. I mean, that was a plot device in the Aftermath books, was like a puppet ruler of the Imperial Remnant, you know, before founding the First Order. I don't think they're going to double up.
It's weird, but again, these are the most concrete declarative things that have ever been said with any sort of position of authority on a website. And granted, it's the French version of making Star Wars. I don't know how much clout to give that, but we've gotten very little about the plot points of this movie, and these are some of the most impactful ones we've received. So feel free to discuss those things in the Star Wars Spoilers Facebook group. That's where all the action happens when we're not releasing episodes. And we will see you in 2 weeks for an all-new State of the Empire.